All right. Hi, everybody. My name is Liz, and I'm a third-year psychiatry resident at the University of Michigan, and I'm here to talk to you guys a little bit about a topic that I hold very near and dear to my heart, and that is anxiety. I have no professional disclosures, but I do have a personal one, and that is that I myself suffer from an anxiety disorder. As I advanced in age, I started to develop panic attacks at really inopportune times, like anytime I tried to go on a date or give a presentation. So what this means for tonight is that I definitely don't feel calm as I'm doing this, but I'm going to give it my best shot. And I guess I'd just like to get started by asking if anybody here has an anxiety disorder or knows somebody that does. All right. Way to not be shy. So according to the National Institute of Mental Health, approximately 30% of adults will be diagnosed with an anxiety disorder in their lifetime. So let's start by talking about what anxiety is. Anxiety is classified as an emotion that's characterized by a certain type of thoughts, and those are thoughts that generally fall within the worried category. These thoughts are usually associated with a physiological change within your body, as well as a behavioral change, and that behavioral change is usually avoidance. The parts of your brain and nervous system that are activated when you're anxious are actually really similar to the response that you generate when you feel like you're being threatened or you're fearing something. So when you have anxiety, it kind of feels like you're that gazelle being chased by the cheetah all the time. So your brain is broken down into different regions based on functionality. There are certain regions that are really important in the fear response and in the anxiety response as well. So one part, the ventral medial prefrontal cortex, which lies within the frontal lobe, is kind of known as the executive decision maker of our brain. So this part of our brain takes all the information that your body's receiving, everything that it's been exposed to, all the information that the other parts are sending to it, and tries to put it all together and come up with some kind of response. The next two parts that are really important to this response are the amygdala and hippocampus. And these two regions lie deep within the brain, largely within what's called the temporal lobe, and they are traditionally associated with the fear response, generation of emotions, and also memory formation. So if we take it down to a little bit more of a microscopic level, our brain is made of millions of cells called neurons. These neurons communicate with one another by releasing these special chemicals called neurotransmitters. Neurotransmitters work by binding to a receptor on the next neuron in line and then signaling some kind of reaction. So it's kind of like if you were taking a key and putting it in a lock and then you'd unleash some kind of reaction. And there are many, many different types of neurotransmitters within our brain, and each neurotransmitter usually has a bunch of receptors that it can bind to. And one type of neurotransmitter that's really important in anxiety disorders and fear response is that called serotonin. So then let's move on to our nervous system, which is basically the extension from the brain into our body. Our nervous system is broken down into parts that we control voluntarily, things like moving your arm, and parts that we and things that we don't control voluntarily at all. So that part of your nervous system is called the autonomic nervous system, and that's further divided into the sympathetic and the parasympathetic divisions. The sympathetic nervous system is responsible for what's called the fight or flight response. So if you were that gazelle in that picture being chased by that cheetah, your sympathetic nervous system would be revving up, getting ready to go, helping you decide whether you're going to fight that or try to get away from it. And when this happens, you're going to be feeling things like a racing heart, you're going to start breathing faster, your muscles are going to tense, your pupils are going to dilate. It's a very physical response. The parasympathetic nervous system, for our purpose, largely opposes what the sympathetic nervous system does in our body. And just the point that I want you to take home from this is that the sympathetic nervous system is responsible for those physical sensations that you're feeling in your body when you get really anxious or afraid. So I'm going to tie it all together and try to be a little more specific to anxiety. Some of the theories are that the pathways associated with fear become dysregulated. Specifically, the amygdala and the hippocampus become overactivated, and that ventral medial prefrontal cortex, well, that's failing to downregulate or inhibit that response. There are also theories that there's either not enough serotonin in the brain, or perhaps it's not binding to receptors in the way that it should. And ultimately, what this can mean for a lot of people is that your sympathetic nervous system is being overactivated or activated at inappropriate times, and also that it's less flexible. So it's not calming down when it should be. All right. So when does anxiety become a disorder? So three simple ways. If you feel like the thoughts are excessive or just out of proportion to the fear that you actually have, if it's leading to any kind of avoidant behavior, but this is a point that I want to drive home. If it is getting in your way of functioning, or if you feel like you can't do what you want because you're being held back by your anxiety, then it might be time to think about...
Another drink.
Yeah. I was going to say seeing a doctor, but whatevs. So the DSM-5 is a book that mental health providers use to basically take a bunch of symptoms, group them together, put them in categories, and label them so everyone knows what they're talking about. Within the most recent version of the DSM-5, they listed many anxiety disorders, as I've put up here on the screen for you. And I just want to talk about a few of them, but as you can see, there are a lot. So generalized anxiety disorder is characterized by excessive thoughts. It might feel like your mind's always racing. You might notice that you feel very tense, very restless, very irritable. Your worries might prevent you from falling asleep at night, or maybe prevent you from focusing at work. But at the end of the day, it's just getting in your way of being able to do what you need to do. A social anxiety disorder is a fear of going out in social settings or certain type of performance things, like, you know, presenting at nerd night, because you're ultimately worried about how you're going to do or if people are going to judge you. And what this leads you to do is avoid these situations. Within all of these anxiety disorders, you can have these things called panic attacks, and they're characterized by shortness of breath, racing heart, feeling like you're going to die, a sense of doom. And basically, this is that overactivation of the sympathetic nervous system. And sometimes, some people have them very often, and they will have them with no clear trigger, and they start to fear them. And this is when it becomes a panic disorder. And then finally, we have something called agoraphobia, where you are essentially afraid to go out in public places because you're afraid something might happen to you, but there's really no clear reason why. All right, so now that you've probably diagnosed yourself or a friend or a loved one with an anxiety disorder, what do you do about it? So treatment is generally broken down into medications, therapy, and lifestyle modifications. And usually there's not just one thing that works for everybody. It's usually a combination of all the things listed. So I'd just like to start by briefly talking about medications. And meds are kind of broken down into those that you take every day that are going to reduce anxiety overall, and then also medications that you're going to use to take just to kind of turn off a really severe anxiety response when it's happening, or if you only have anxiety once in a while. So meds that reduce overall anxiety generally fall in the class of medications that are called antidepressants. And tonight I just would like to kind of talk about the first line treatment, which is called an SSRI, or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. And this increases the availability of that chemical serotonin in the brain and goes by names I'm sure that you've all heard, like Prozac and Celexa and Lexapro. These meds are great. They do work well over time. They're pretty safe, and they kind of have some side effects, but they're generally minimal in the bigger scheme of things. But the problem is they take up to 4 to 6 weeks to work. And then you also have to be on a therapeutic dose. So maybe if you're someone having panic attacks every day, or you just can't calm down your mind, you might need something to kind of keep it under control in the meantime. And this is when you would turn to things like the benzodiazepines and the beta blockers. The benzodiazepines are really effective at reducing anxiety. They release this neurochemical called GABA within your brain, and it kind of quiets everything down. And these go by names like Xanax, Clonopin, and Ativan. The bad thing is that over time, your body kind of builds up a tolerance to them, and they're also habit-forming. And the other bad thing is that you really shouldn't mix the chill pills with alcohol, so you shouldn't take one and come to nerd night and have a drink. And then there's also this thing called beta blockers, and they immediately are kind of stopping that response from the sympathetic nervous system. So they're really going to target the physical symptoms that you're feeling from overactivation of your nervous system. Next, I'd just like to briefly talk about therapy. So kind of starting with individual therapy, this can be something as easy as one-on-one sessions you have with somebody once a week where you just kind of talk about your worries, do some problem solving, to maybe something that's a little more intensive, like psychodynamic psychotherapy where you're trying to figure out, you know, what's underlying, what's causing and driving that anxiety. But some of the mainstay, or excuse me, one of the mainstays of anxiety treatment is this thing called CBT, or cognitive behavioral therapy. And basically, this type of therapy kind of aims to change the distorted thought processes that are often found in individuals that have anxiety disorders. So people tend to be prone to kind of a catastrophic thought process, or maybe always seeing the glass half negative, or maybe always really getting in the pattern of fearing a certain thing. And so what CBT aims to do is take your thoughts and kind of just make them a little bit more realistic. And it does this by things like homework and practicing. And it's effective because when you have an anxiety disorder, those pathways in your brain, those little neurons that are getting activated when you fear something or you worry about something, well, it happens once, it happens twice, and every time it happens, it gets easier and easier and easier. What CBT does is literally try to reroute how your neurons are working so that you get a new thought process, and hopefully one that's not going to make you feel as fearful or distressed. There's also another part of it. It's called exposure response therapy, and basically this is kind of geared towards people that have a lot of avoidant behaviors or maybe a specific phobia. And what it tries to do is just expose you to these things you fear gradually so that over time you get acclimated to them and you learn, hey, maybe I shouldn't be that worried about it. And you just get more comfortable and reduce anxiety in that regard. And then finally, there's something that's been getting some talk lately called neurobiofeedback, and that's actually where you stick EEG leads on your head and you watch your body as certain parts of your nervous system gets activated or you get really worried, and you learn to get really comfortable with that physical response and then try to minimize it by doing things like progressive muscle relaxation and just take those with you when you go about your day to try to calm yourself down. And then finally, you're going to want to practice good self-care. So if you have an anxiety disorder, you want to avoid things that exacerbate it, like caffeine or some medications like stimulants. You also want to exercise regularly because you're kind of teaching your body when to activate that sympathetic nervous system, and also you're tiring yourself out. So if you are tired, you have less energy to devote to that worried thought process. And you also might have to make environmental changes. Maybe you don't really have a social anxiety disorder. Maybe your friends are just toxic and it's time to reconsider a few things in your life. And finally, you want to avoid avoiding, because every time you avoid, you tell your brain, yep, that's scary, we better keep running from it, and then this is just going to happen over and over and over again. So, in summary, anxiety is an emotion characterized by thoughts that are associated by physiologic changes as well as behavioral adaptations, and this is usually avoidance. The parts of the brain and the nervous system that become dysregulated are often associated with a fear response, and also a neurotransmitter, the availability and the function of it in the brain is altered. And as we've seen, there are many different anxiety disorders, but there are also many different types of treatment. And like I said before, and this is also what I hope you take home if you share this with anybody, is that it's usually going to take a little bit of everything to really help get that anxiety under control. All these things together should have an additive effect. And I just also would like to put some resources up here in case anybody would like to learn more. So NAMI and the National Institute of Mental Health are websites that are online, and they actually have great definitions and links to other resources that people can use just for education, should they be inclined to do so. And then there's this other cool website called Moodsmith, and this was created by a psychologist that had anxiety, so it's a website that teaches you all about it and also exercises you can do to try to help yourself. And then there's another really cool one called Mood Gym. And it was created by this group in Australia that wanted everybody to have access to CBT. So basically they made like an online class for cognitive behavioral therapy. And they offer so many sessions free so that people can log in and familiarize themselves with it. And here are my sources. And
thank you.